This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast, and here I am once more with my ever so eloquent, always ready for, I don't know, picking up
some engineering.
Left off. Some engineering?
Yes.
How about lots of engineering? Do you have lots of engineering?
Only if it's the data kind.
We are continuing with our little series here on AI project failures. And it seems like in some cases, maybe there's not enough engineering, or at least not enough engineers.
Well, you can never have enough engineers, obviously. That's just, yeah, I mean, that's just a fact. More engineers make everything better.
Maybe not budgets.
Well, in an economy, money needs to be spent to make the economy good. More engineers, more money, more salaries. Good, good, good.
Okay, I think we'll leave that particular topic right now, and we'll get back to the topic we're supposed to be talking about, which is apparently one of the identified areas where projects fall flat or don't achieve their particular goals is apparently too few data engineers being available. And we should kind of clarify this a little bit. They are specifically talking about data engineers, and I actually kind of love the comment, or it's actually a quote. One interviewee referred to data engineers as the plumbers of data science. So this is very much not talking about data scientists being a limitation. This is about data engineers, the people that basically, without which data engineers, you don't have any data, or at least you don't have any good data. And
what's worse, not having any data or having a lot of bad data?
I think if you don't have any data, at least you know that you don't have any data, you know there's a problem. If you just have bad data, the question is, do you know that it's bad data? Or do you just think, oh, great, I've got data, away we go. And then, you know, you end up 6 months down the line with a project that's failed spectacularly because, you know, garbage in, garbage out still applies very much in this world.
Yep, I agree. Not having data. Better to have nothing than have something based on something bad. Now, we used to have a long time ago, you could actually buy Roaring Elephant trinkets, and we had a sticker that said, if you torture the data enough, you can make it admit to anything. And that's the third category, right? That's looking at data from a certain point of view and not really using the data as it is, but making the data somewhere. And I think for me, that's where the differentiation between a data engineer and a data scientist starts. Sure, data engineers need to get the data in, but they also kind of are responsible usually to getting the right data in the right presentations, anonymizations, things like that. If you leave it up to the data scientist, who's very close to the thing that is supposed to be built, there's an, I think, inevitable tendency towards massaging the data a little bit so the pretty graphs are even more pretty, and having a kind of separation of responsibilities is it's more than just two eyes on one project. It's actually having different responsibilities, making sure that everything has done her due diligence to make sure it's all okay.
Yeah, and often I've seen cases where often the data, and it kind of maybe sounds obvious, but like the data engineers are more familiar with the data. They're more more familiar with the data, with the context of the business, than maybe the data scientists.
That depends. Kind of depends on the kind of data scientists you hired. Now, maybe to backtrack a little bit, in the early days, like long time ago, like, I don't know, last year or so, people were hiring data scientists, and that was their data team, that was their AI team, that was their machine learning team. The data scientists did everything. Now, typically, those data scientists were mathematicians, doctorates, something, very smart people usually, but they, got a bunch of data and tried to make something from it. Data engineer role was added a lot later because a lot of it, I mean, data scientists are typically very highly paid individuals, and having those individuals spending most of their time on trying to get the data in is just a waste of money. And it's a bit like with DevOps engineers versus developers. DevOps engineers put things together, set things correct, put in the structure so the developers can focus on their task. Same idea here. Data engineers for me are more of the plumbers, making sure it's all working and the data's flowing in and it's okayed, and then the data scientists can start working on it.
Yeah, but also that. I was going to say, much like if you know, continuing to use the plumber analogy, modern life without plumbing is actually like pretty miserable. I would. Not a lot of fun, I don't think, and. This is where I don't know that I necessarily agree with the way that sort of the market views these kind of roles. And there's just, if you don't have good data coming into it almost doesn't matter what we're talking about. Here we're talking about, you know, AI projects. But if you don't have good data in anything that you do, then everything else that follows is fundamentally flawed. And I think that data engineering is a vastly sort of underestimated and underappreciated role and space. And I think, frankly, data engineering should be maybe not given more importance than data science, but it should at least be up there kind of shoulder to shoulder. And I mean, there's a lot more tooling available for data engineers, I think, to help automate more of the sort of what they're able to do at scale. But you know, I think this is one of those situations where if you don't have good data engineers, it doesn't matter how much you're paying your data scientists. Like, chances are you won't end up with a good end result.
Yeah, and also we talked in the early episodes, not everything needs AI, but everything needs, as you say, data engineers. So quite often by having good data engineers, you might actually save on having a whole AI project.
That's a great point, yeah.
So
yeah.
Now, I do think data engineers are going to be lower valued always because of scarcity. Data scientists, and then I mean the good data scientists that actually earning the name, are very specific, a bit niche, if you like. So they'll be scarcer, so you'll have to pay more for them. While data engineers are more easily found because they're typically a lot of DevOps engineers can move into a data engineering role. Mm. So there's always going to be a difference there, obviously. Now, I am also going to take one for the team here because I think that you and I are partially responsible in a very, very small measure for the undervaluation of data engineers. And specifically, I'm talking about Hadoop here because I love Hadoop. I've loved Hadoop always. But Hadoop kind of had that idea of just dump the data in and then your data scientist can build from it. Now, everybody, that's not what Hadoop said, but that's what people heard. And with, I think there's been a bit of time to wait until people realize that that was not what was meant, and you actually needed to have people that sanitize the data. I mean, I still remember one of the first times we went out together at Hortonworks, you had a little three columns of your data things coming in, prepared consumption thing. I still use it today, to be honest, but still a lot of people don't have that vision.
Yeah. Yeah, this whole, God, yeah, I'm having flashbacks and PTSD now. But, you know, things like, you know, data lake and data swamp and all this kind of, you know, yeah, you're absolutely right in that there is no just throw raw data at things. Mm-hmm. It'll be all right.
And actually, I can prove to you that it's still a mindset because I have seen the term AI lake.
Well, I think this actually kind of segues on pretty nicely to the next kind of reason, which is lack of suitable data. The kind of next reason that they see projects failing is that the data that they're getting, so maybe they've got enough data engineers, but they don't have the right data that they're trying to plug into this program. It's I think for me this is about when you're trying to use AI to solve a problem, you may need a different, or you may need additional data that you maybe don't already have. Like if you're, I think in a lot of cases, if you're trying to solve a problem with AI, you will need more data than you think. You agree with that? Disagree with that?
Almost. It kind of depends on the maturity of the people trying to do this. If this is your first, one of the first projects, yes, not enough data is obviously often going to be a problem. If you've done this in your season, then you had some successful projects, you probably learned through doing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the data needs to be big in both dimensions. One, you need a lot of data points, because what machine learning often does, not always, but in general, is kind of trying to detect a trend in the data, trying to detect where the data is going towards. And if you only have like two data points, you can make an average, but that's about it. If you have 10 data points, well, if those 10 data points all happen in 1 second, you can probably do something. If those 10 data points happen across 10 months, you have nothing again. And a lot of people look at, we need a lot of data in amount of data points, which is true, yes, but also within certain limits of data, because having 3 million or 30 or 300 million data points sounds like a great thing. Yes, this is an archive from the last 50 years. Okay, no, that's not going to happen unless you just want to kind of have an average for a year or something like that, which is typically not what people are looking for. So you mentioned the context of the data, so having more columns in the data. I'm kind of first looking at just the quantity of the data, not even the quality, but just the quantity. And that's actually typically a problem, because what I've been seeing is that a lot of customers, a lot of organizations are trying to make use cases that are very, very granular, very, very specific. A very nice example there is audit logging of access to case files. People want to have anomaly detection jobs that kind of detect that this case file was accessed in an abnormal way. Sounds good. And I think for medical data, for example, perfect use case. You want to make sure that somebody only looks at the medical data of a patient when they need to. And if it's that was in the Netherlands or somewhere around here, a celebrity being in a hospital, and suddenly it was in a newspaper because somebody kind of delved into the archives of the hospital and put it on the papers. That's a very difficult use case to do. I mean, they have billions of records because there's millions of patients over a year and there's a lot of interactions happening, sure. But a single case file will be accessed 10 times, maybe 20 times in its lifetime. For a normal, you come in, you get signed in, you do your thing, get your plaster, and you come out again. When is that normal? You can't really find a trend there. And there's also going to be very differentiation. Even though you have millions of things, they're looking at these very little subsections of the data. And that's a different way of looking at things. You're going to look at classifications, at outlier detections, which are different ways of doing it. So having suitable data, which is what the report is talking about, is also for me meaning suitable for the type of machine learning you're trying to do. Because regression, classification, outlier detection, only detection kind of have different expectations of the data, things that they require, volume that they require, and things like that.
Yeah. And the other thing, you know, when I think about these particular situations and the context, like ensuring you've got enough data to bring out or to be able to get a better handle on the context of what's happening. Very often, I think when data is usually captured, like the context is completely absent, because when data is used in a lot of times, I think when data is used in non-ML AI type use cases, the context is sort of almost emergent. So if I think about like a dashboard or something like that, where you've got a pretty graph of, I don't know, sales numbers or CPU load or whatever it might be, you as a human look at the graph and you go, ooh, you know, maybe if it's sales numbers, ooh, number goes up and to the right, number equals good, excellent, or graph equals good, excellent. Or if it's CPU load, you know, maybe you want that to be high. Maybe you want your CPU to be 100% utilized all the time because it's doing good stuff. Mm-hmm. But we as humans look at, you know, a graph or an interpretation of the data, and we hopefully naturally know, oh, you know, this looks good. Well, AI doesn't know that. You need the data to provide the context on what is good and what is not good. And I think that this is kind of, I suppose this is what goes back to my initial comment around often the data is like quite thin or quite skinny. It doesn't have the additional metadata or context or additional information that to get a good result you actually need in a lot of these cases.
Yeah, and it's also something that people have been trained to do, right? Again, in the olden days, like 10 years ago, storage was expensive. And people pared down the data set as much as possible because it became just too expensive to store it all. In the last decade or so, I think the messaging has been, again, the Hadoop message was save all the data and figure out what you want to do with it afterwards. And that is still valid with the caveat you just talked about earlier, but you still need to store more data today, even if you don't know what you're going to be doing with it today, because you might need it tomorrow. Now, fortunately, storage systems have become cheaper. It's easier now to have a petabyte of data. I mean, 10 years ago, a petabyte of data was like, oh God, never going to happen. These days, even smaller customers have data arrays, and of course, cloud storage is there as well. So that becomes possible. But there's still some, let's call it penny pinching for our care. We shouldn't store all this data because when we calculate it all together, it's too expensive. So they decide to go, we need to do machine learning in the future, but they're still having the mentality of only capturing what they need right now. And that's a disconnect. And a data engineer isn't going to fix that. A data scientist isn't going to fix that. Gen AI isn't going to fix that, because that's the latest dangerous trend I've seen, where people just try to ask Gen AI, I've got this data set, please augment it with context. And Gen AI will augment it with context. Yes. And yeah, well,
yeah, that's not here's a whole bunch of hallucination. Enjoy.
That's really, that's a problem. And it's still, a lot of people only save the data because they need to do it for compliance reasons, because law says you need to keep the data 20 years. And those people are actually lucky when it comes to things like data science, because they have a treasure trove of data, of neat, raw, unmolested data. Apart from that, it's still very hard to do that. And the amount of times that I've had a customer say, I've got this nice data set. Yeah, it's an Excel sheet with two columns. One is a date stamp. Okay, so I guess we can do a prediction. Yeah, it doesn't work. Yeah, well, I mean, the cheap trick I use then is, okay, you have a date stamp. We can make 20 columns from that, one for the weekday, one for the hour, one for the solar cycle. I don't know. That actually does help a little bit to do aggression and to predict sales volumes, things like that. But that is so narrow. And that leads us to the next one, where people often ask, yeah, the model has done this, but we have this data set and we were launching new product, moving data center, doing something that influenced the data results. Can we tell the model to not count that? And that's again where a data engineer and data scientist can really lock hands together to counter that a little bit, because you're using machine learning to automate things. And automating things means don't touch, let the system do it itself. The moment you go deep into the details and start doing if then else, yep, okay, do that. But that's just threshold based at that point. Don't start using, either you do machine learning or you don't. And as you mentioned a long time ago by now, you don't use a model in isolation. You use the model to generate an output that is not finished. That's the raw entry for the next step in the filtering, aggregation, whatever. So any kind of exceptions, do it at a later step, but let machine learning do what it should do.
Yep. Well, I think we've probably pretty much covered this one.
Well, apparently Dave has nothing more to say, which is usually a good thing because that is all the time we have for today. you can become a podcast. No, you can't become a podcast. You can become a patron for this podcast. That way you can support us a little bit, contributions every month. That does really help. We're on YouTube. You can see us in 3D. Well, fake 3D because it's still 2D, but it looks like 3D. And you can go to our website at www.drawingalpha.org. There's links there to the Patreon page, other stuff. And you can send email to podcast@drawingalpha.org. Any feedback, any things you think we should talk about, things we shouldn't talk about, let us know. We're happy to hear from you. Until next time, my name is Unfiltered Data Jon.
And my name is Modern Plumbing Dave.
And we look forward to talking for okay. We look forward to talking to you again next week. Sorry, I saw you in that little Mario outfit there.
See you then.